And welcome to another Trev and Ben podcast. Hello, Ben.
Hello, Trev.
How's your week?
Yeah, not too bad. You?
Yeah, I mean, amid the horror show that is the world still, I've seen, you know, sometimes in life you think, I feel I've seen everything. And I know that's a weird thing to say at 44, because I'd hope I have many years ahead left of things that could surprise me.
Well, fingers crossed, yeah.
And then this week I saw two things in life that I've never seen before. And I thought, well, there you go, life can still throw up some interesting, surprising things.
Well, what have you seen?
First, well, one of them's quite sort of nice and sweet. And the other one's slightly horrific.
Okay, let's start with the sweet thing.
Well, I ended up seeing a little bit of Crufts this week.
I didn't realise it was still going.
What do you mean you didn't realise it was? Of course Crufts is still going. Crufts is going nowhere. No matter what happens in the world, there should still be a dog show.
Okay,
now, apart from seeing Claire Boarding being, I want to say molested by a dog. That was,
oh dear.
I mean, well, the dog was all over her. It was quite a thing. But I'll tell you what they had at Crufts was a dog, what's the little dog, a chihuahua?
Yes, that is a little dog. Yes, it might not be the little dog, but it's a little dog.
Doing ballet.
That's weird.
Yeah, at Swan Lake it was doing a little bit of.
So I'm assuming it was just standing on its back legs and sort of wobbling around a bit.
Well, it was dancing with a woman. But it seemed to know what to do at certain points of the music, and it was following the lady, and as she did little bits of movement, so the dog would do little bits of movement. And I thought, well, there's something I never thought of. I never thought would exist. I never thought I would see. I know there are dog acts. There's been enough dog acts on all those TV shows. Didn't one win it, the Britain's Got Talent or X Factor or one of those? Didn't the dog win it once?
Was it called Pudsey?
Pudsey.
I seem to remember, yeah.
Who, I think he's sadly no longer with us.
I believe you're right, yes, which is sad.
Bit of a downer, but it had quite a life because it found fame. So I know there are dog acts, but ballet, it seems an amazing thing to me that you can teach a dog to do ballet. Because, you know, like, they can teach horses to dance, dressage.
Yeah.
I mean, I watch it when the Olympics are on, and I don't want to offend anyone who likes dressage, but it just seems to me like the horse moving backwards and forwards a little bit.
Just sort of bouncing up and down, trotting a bit. And it smacks of a sport for the elite. You know, the poshos. Yeah. Like, there are a few sports which I think are exclusive to the poshos. Mm. Dressage, polo, lacrosse.
Lacrosse?
I think so. Maybe lacrosse is a bit more down to earth.
Yeah, but,
polo, certainly. Dressage, certainly.
Anything with horses.
Fencing. Really. Fencing's for posh boys.
Yeah, because, I mean, I didn't do fencing at school. It wasn't on the curriculum at my school.
And you went to a fairly posh school.
Posh-ish, yeah. Or, well, it thought it was posh. I'm surprised it didn't offer it, because it thought it, the school I went to had such delusions of grandeur that it wouldn't have surprised me if they went, today, boys, we're going to be doing fencing. And what was the poshest thing that your school offered?
What, by way of lessons?
Well, anything posh.
I don't know if it's posh, but I went to a Church of England school. Not really poshest, but it always struck me as very strange. Like once a year, we'd have to all leave the school, walk up the road to a local church where our headmaster would give us a religious service, all in his best cape.
Yeah,
and religious robes and
cape.
Stuff.
It's like he's some sort of Marvel superhero.
God man.
You mean his gown?
Yes, gown is probably a better word than cape.
He turned up in his cape.
That always struck me as a bit of an alien environment that didn't really fit.
But what was the purpose?
No, I don't think the school. Oh, just general god bothering, I think.
Wasn't like, because we used to do that for Founders Day.
Did you have a school song?
There was a school hymn. I couldn't tell you what it was.
No, I can only remember elements of it. But yeah, that seems like a bit of a, like you say, delusions of grandeur, highfalutin thing to have your own hymn about how great you are because you go to this poxy school.
At ours, the Founders Day, my memory of it was, we used to have this guy who's no longer with us, but this guy, Dr. Roy Porter, I think his name was, and he'd been a pupil at the school years ago, and he'd come and give us a lecture, a history lecture. He was a history professor or something. I mean, God bless him. God, it was dull.
But at least he'll be remembered fondly for his incredibly boring lectures. That's great.
I mean, I just thought, like, every year you think, oh, I wonder if Founders Day this year they're going to bring someone else in who might be a little bit more interesting. I mean, Michael Caine was a former pupil at our school.
Why not? Really?
Why not bring him in to have a chat? Because that would have been more interesting, wouldn't it? To have him stand up and say, when I came to this school.
Are you going back to the unnecessary Michael Caine dramatic pause?
There were still doors.
I think you've out-celebrated me. I can't name you any celebs that went to my secondary school, but my big claim to fame is that Kate Moss went to my primary school. But Michael Caine shits on that all day long.
Yeah.
Michael Caine.
But did Kate Moss ever come back to the school and give a talk?
Almost certainly not.
So why couldn't we get Michael Caine instead of... I'm very interested. I'm sure now, as an adult, I'd find Dr. Roy Porter incredibly interesting. But as a teenager, I couldn't have given any more of a monkey's than possible to give. So we'd have that. I think that would be in the morning. And then in the afternoon, we'd all have to march off to Croydon Parish Church. You know, the big church in Croydon.
Yes.
I think it's now got a different name. But, and then, as you say, all the teachers would be in their gowns.
It all goes a bit Hogwarts, doesn't it?
Yes. Yes, it all went very Hogwarts. I mean, it was weird at my school because even the teachers wore gowns at just normal assembly.
Really?
I'm sure, or certainly the headmaster would. He'd rock up in his gown. I mean, it was so old-fashioned. It's so ridiculous. I'd prefer it if he wore a cape. It'd be much better if he turned up in a cape.
I have just remembered something about my old secondary school, which smacked of trying too hard. You said, what was the poshest thing we did? I can't really remember, like I say, any lessons that were that posh. But besides what I also mentioned, did you have like a leaving dance for the year 11s when they left?
No, we didn't.
You didn't, like a prom type thing?
Well, bear in mind, it was an all-boys school. So
yes.
That wouldn't have really worked. And also, I just don't think it was a thing then.
We had it, but they were far too up their own arse to call it a prom. So they called it the soiree.
Oh, fuck off.
I swear to God, which is like what
this
Fraser Crane would call it.
Having a soiree. Yeah,
having a soiree.
Wow. What did they serve at this soiree? Lemonade and jam?
No, nothing was really served. It was just basically the end of, you know, you're all pissing off now. You're all in year 11. You've finished your GCSEs. You're off out the door. Have one last big dance and we'll call it the soiree.
Soiree. And...
of course, when I was that age, I didn't know what the fuck a soiree was. It was just the name of what the last dance thing was. I didn't quite know until I grew up a bit how incredibly pretentious that was.
Did you have to dress up for it?
You were expected to, yes. So everyone came in their sort of suits and things. And one lad, I think his name was Jeffrey, he stole the show by turning up in a limousine in an all-white tuxedo with a sort of walking stick with a sort of diamond stud on the top.
Oh, I mean, I hate this kid.
He looked like an absolute pimp. It was amazing.
So, like, he's got a cane with a, did you say, like, a diamond? That must have been plastic.
No. Oh, yeah. There's no chance it was a real diamond, no.
How has he persuaded his carers to splash out the cash for that?
I think he wanted to steal the show, and God bless him, he did. And I think, I think from memory, there may have even been a white top hat to cap the suit off. Top hat, completely white suit, white shoes, white top hat, cane with a diamond on it. I mean, he looked like a drug dealer, but
I mean,
it worked.
That's incredible. And what were you wearing? Just a off the peg suit? Because if that had been me, I'd probably still have worn my blazer. I don't think I would have had any other suit jacket at that age to have worn.
Oh no, you couldn't have got away with coming in your suit jacket. It had to be formal wear. Yeah,
formal wear.
So basically, everyone had to go and rush out to the shops and get, like you say, an off-the-peg suit.
Do you know, I can't stand it. I can't stand it. I was reading the other day, you know, a couple of weeks ago, it was World Book Day.
I didn't, but I'll take your word for it.
And that wasn't a thing when I was at school, but now it's like a massive thing, right? So all the kids have to go in fancy dress. They have to dress up as there's something from their favourite books. And I saw someone write up, and I sort of found myself agreeing with it. It was like, the pressure it puts on parents to spend more money to get some sort of costume, because no one makes a costume anymore. Because you can't get away with it. Like when I was a kid, I'm sure my mum would never have bought a costume if I had to dress up as anything. She would have made something.
In my primary school, I got the lead role in the nativity. I was the donkey. Role.
Well, that would the be donkey. Jesus, wouldn't it? Or Joseph.
No, the donkey.
Yeah. Of course, very important.
Yes, I owned that role. I put my unique stamp on the role of donkey. And like you say, my mum didn't rush out and buy me all sorts of expensive donkey-related costumes. No. A couple of brown pillowcases.
A
couple of scissor cuts here and there.
Yeah.
There you go.
Donkey. Perfect. I have worked in schools where they have like a year six disco when you're moving from primary to secondary, but it's just a disco, you know, nothing. It's nothing major. Do you know what I mean? A bit of fizzy pop and some biscuits and music. I DJed. I was the DJ at one, and they asked me to come and play the music. And none of the kids really want to dance, because at that age, it's all a bit embarrassing. Did anyone dance at your soiree?
I think probably some of the more confident dancers did, but basically it was the boys on one side, the girls on the other, all sort of staring at their shoes, shuffling awkwardly. Yeah.
Oh, it's just a pointless exercise. Just stop all that. Can we just stop all that nonsense?
So I'm curious about your early DJing life.
Mm.
Did you think to throw in a sort of Trevor and Ben style link in between the songs? Or
No, I was just playing the music. This was only about 10 years ago.
And so you didn't go into a funny anecdote into the weather and travel news and then back into REM?
I didn't think it was appropriate to be doing that at a year six disco. I thought all they want to hear is... I don't know what the big songs of the day were, Little Mix or something. You know, that's all they want to hear. I think the most embarrassing.
Little Mix?
Well, I don't know, whatever was big.
I thought you said you were 44. Have you just finished school?
This was 10 years ago. I wasn't doing it whilst I was at school.
Oh, okay. I really got the impression that you were you were in year six and you were the DJ for the year six disco.
No. I thought I was in year six, or as we called it, fourth year. I mean, all this confusing year six, year seven nonsense. Can we just go back to fourth year? I know where you're at. So this was fourth year, your final year at primary school. When you left, it was, thank you very much. Now piss off out the door.
Yeah.
And this, I think we might have had a party in the classroom.
Was that it?
Yeah, bring games in, final day.
Oh, last day of term.
Christmas.
But the thing is, you'd have to be stupid to bring in your own games because they'd inevitably get lost or stolen or broken.
Yeah.
So you just... play other people's.
So you didn't take any games in?
No.
Oh, Ben, you're such a killjoy.
Well, and as a result, I kept all my possessions.
I took games in. I don't remember losing anything.
Yeah, but you don't want to have to be vigilant all day and making sure everyone's putting all the pieces back in the box, do you? You want to enjoy the last day.
Don't take a complicated game with lots of pieces, Ben. Pick your game. Just take a pack of cards.
That's not much fun.
Poker. Start winning some money off of these kids. It sounds like they're turning up pimped up for the soiree. Anyway, back to the ballet dancing dog.
Oh, yes. That was quite a tangent, wasn't it?
So that's one thing I saw this week. Quite extraordinary. Never thought I'd see a ballet dancing dog.
Okay.
By the way, can I just say how much I found myself getting into Crufts, and I was watching the agility round where the dogs do the obstacle course.
Oh, yes.
Oh, Ben, it's quite exciting.
I'm not sure I could enjoy Crufts, and I don't mean to be mean, but I just can't stand Claire Balding.
Well, don't watch it while she's not on it all the time.
I thought you said she was hosting.
She hosts it, but she's not. Like when they go, no, let's go to the agility bit of the dog show. You've got Jim Rosenthal doing the commentary along with some other blokes, presumably some dog expert. I almost said dogger, but some dog expert. So Claire Balding's not on screen at that point. And then watch the dogs do their thing and then mute the sound if you don't want to be watching Claire Balding being molested by a Great Dane.
I saw her being exceptionally rude to a jockey once, making cracks
about his teeth.
Yeah, she was making cracks about this guy's teeth. And I thought, well, hang on a minute, Claire, you're not exactly an oil painting yourself, love.
Wow.
Not that I'm going to go in judging people by the way they look, but if you're going to start throwing around insults, then you might have to sort of check your own stability before you do so, don't you think?
Well, I don't. Let's not get into a looks war, but I mean, this is
no. But she started it.
This is a little bit of a sensitive topic for me, Ben. I'll tell you why. Because my group of friends, and I call them friends very loosely when it comes to this, because they have decided that I look like Claire Boarding.
Well, that is not true.
Or she looks like me. So it comes up quite often. So if anyone questions Claire Boarding's attractiveness, Ben, I take that very personally because I apparently look nothing like
Claire Boarding. And by the way, if you want to try and work out who looks like who, the answer is who's older.
Well, she must be older than me, surely.
Well, then you look like her. She can't look like you if she was the original.
Yes, okay, fair enough. I look like her. Either way, there's a lookalike thing going on, and my friends will not leave it alone. In fact, for Christmas, I was given a Claire Boarding mask.
Why? That seems pointless, doesn't it?
Well, it was just a way of saying you look like Claire Boarding.
You don't look like Claire Boarding. And listen, I wouldn't come on here and just say, oh, isn't Claire Boarding ugly? I wouldn't do that. That would be rude and offensive.
Very rude and very offensive.
She definitely cast the first stone with this thing, like mocking someone else for their looks. I thought, hang on a minute, love. People in glass houses and all that. So she's horrible. I just don't like her at all.
Can I just say for our American listeners, as I know we've got a few listeners out in America, Claire Boarding is a sports presenter on British television, and she presents every single sport that's on, including dog shows. Mm. She's like anything that's remotely sporty, because they have turned crufts into a sporting event. It used to be very straight-laced. I remember as a kid it being on the telly, and Peter Purvis, the old Blue Peter presenter, an actor, was presenting it. It was all very straight-laced, and now it's all... Like yesterday, before the agility round, there was like an opera singer in the middle of the arena giving some grand performance with lights and everything. It's a very big thing now.
Am I right in thinking that Sean Williamson, also known as Barry from EastEnders, still does crufts, or does he do the bowls?
That was the indoor bowls.
The
indoor bowls. I think he still does that at the grand final of the indoor bowls. He comes and goes, Mustang Sally!
Does he know any other songs, or is it just Mustang Sally?
It's kind of that little medley, I think. Mustang Sally, You've Lost That Loving Feeling, I think you might do. It's that sort of era. Because that's the era of the people that watch the indoor bowls. I mean, most of them probably won't make it through to the end of the final.
Yes, they won't be seeing next year's indoor bowls.
Because that surprised me the first time I watched it, because I think I was ill. I'd been ill for a few days, so I ended up getting into watching the indoor bowls.
Just felt right. You're on death's door, yeah. So turn on the bowls.
So I'm watching this thing, and then they bring out... Because I'd been following this one player, I sort of got supporting him a little bit. You know what it's like when you sort of suddenly find yourself, oh, I want this guy to win. So I watched the final, and they bring Sean Williamson out. And it blew my mind, frankly. It also blew the minds of the people watching, because by now they're probably used to it. But then it seemed like this was the first time it was happening. And the look of confusion on the, unless they just thought, what am I doing here? It should be tea time. I don't know. The nurse opens a nice cuppa and a biscuit at this time of day instead of here watching some man sing. I don't know. It was all very bizarre.
I mean, I feel like I have good reason to dislike Claire Boarding for that. To be fair, actually, I don't. That's one transgression in her entire career that I've held a grudge against her for.
That you won't let go.
No, I mean, let's face it. If there's someone fit to judge bitches, then Claire Boarding is probably up there. But is there any celebrities that you... Okay, so like I've said, I've got my reasons for not liking Claire Boarding. I think she was incredibly rude to someone for just once, and I've never let it go.
Yes.
But have you got any celebrities that you just don't like through no fault of their own?
Oh, God, I mean, that's the thing about celebrities, isn't it? That of course there are people that you just cannot stand. And I think that's the thing that everyone has, isn't it? I mean, I was with someone recently, and we were just talking about newsreaders. And
newsreaders?
Yeah. And they went, oh, I can't stand Fiona Bruce. And he's like, what is there to dislike about Fiona Bruce?
Well, that's okay. I'm not going to ask you to justify.
No.
Because the whole point of this is because there are plenty of celebrities I absolutely loathe. Steve Allen is someone I despise, but I have good reason to despise him.
He's a vicious old queen.
Can we say vicious old queen anymore? I'm not sure. But you have now. But that... But what I'm talking about is completely irrational. They've done nothing wrong.
Yeah.
I'll give you one. Robbie Williams.
Yeah, you don't like Robbie Williams, do you?
I don't. I think even he admits he can't sing very well. But I just don't like him.
Yeah.
I like nothing about him. And he's done nothing to me. He's done nothing wrong. I can't point to him being a bad person. I'm sure he's lovely. I just can't stand him. You must have someone that you just fundamentally dislike. Loads.
I mean, I can't stand, again, see, I think I could justify it. If Roy Keane's on the telly, I turn that off. I don't see what he brings to television apart from he's just a mouthy twat.
Now, are you being entirely fair here? Is there an Arsenal Man United thing here?
I didn't like him as a player. But I think he's one of those people they bring on telly because they know he's going to be a miserable get. Do you know what I mean? So, I can't stand him. I used to be renowned for this. I used to be renowned for having a list of people I couldn't stand. And these days, I think because a lot of my hatred now goes towards politicians and people in power, so I tend not to direct it at people who are just there. Do you know what I mean? I think that's what I do now. I think I really try. And also, I think I grew up in a household. I don't know about you, Ben, but I grew up around people who did have this no real reason to dislike people. I'm a big Bruce Forsyth fan. I loved Brucey, right?
Of course, yeah.
No one in my household liked him when I was growing up. Couldn't
really
stand him. Couldn't stand him. I could never work out why they could. The only thing I could really get to the bottom of, they just felt he'd been around too long.
Good God. And that was when you were a kid. He went on for a few years after that.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. And every family does it. You sit down, you've got the kids around you, you just put the telly on, and someone will come on the telly who someone in that family doesn't like. And then you'll get that conversation, like, oh, I can't stand this person. No real reason for it, but we all do it.
I'll tell you what another one of mine is, and this, again, this feels unfair because he's done nothing to anybody, I don't think, but Noel Edmonds.
Noel Edmonds.
Just fundamentally irritating, I think.
Well, I think there was the whole thing of the kind of the cosmic thing.
Yes, with a deal or no deal, that kind of pushed me over the edge with his cosmic bollocks.
Yeah. I tell you who I don't like.
Go on.
For no real reason. I love the chase, as you know, we've talked about this a lot, but I have my list of chasers.
Yeah.
And the beast is at the bottom. I don't enjoy an episode quite as much when the beast is on.
Really? I thought he was kind of like Mr. The Chase.
He is to a lot of people. Again, I've been likened to look like him, by the way, as another lookalike.
Well, I don't mean to sound rude, but you do look more like him than you do look like Claire Balding.
The other thing I saw this week, Ben, do you remember where we started? Do you remember when we started the podcast about half hour ago? And I said I had two things that I'd seen in the last week. One was the dog doing ballet, which was an amazing thing to see, by the way, just to reiterate that.
Yes.
The other thing I saw, which was quite horrific in many ways, but fascinating to watch. This was one of those videos that came with a warning that said distressing images.
Oh, a trigger warning.
Yeah.
Okay.
So this was, I just want you to picture the scene. You're at a zoo and you're at the monkey enclosure.
I've got one word flashing through my mind in neon lights. The word is wanking.
No. I mean, I know that's what you spend a lot of your day thinking about. But try and think of something different.
Okay.
So you're at the monkey enclosure and there's a monkey quite high up on a pole in the enclosure. And there are some seagulls flying around. The monkey grabs a seagull out of the air.
Wow. My God.
Beats it to death on the pole.
No.
Yes. Proper like King Kong style. He's on this pole and they're like the planes going around him. Grabs this seagull and he won't let it go. And he just starts. I'm sorry to any animal lovers. This is not pretty.
Well, it's nature that happened.
Well, this is what I thought. I thought monkeys and seagulls probably don't mix very often. That's a very rare mix, isn't it?
So was the monkey particularly high up or was the seagull particularly low down?
The monkey was pretty high up, yeah.
I mean, that's a fairly dexterous move to be able to pluck a seagull out of the air.
I know.
And seagulls are quite big things, aren't they?
Yes, it's huge. You see the video and there's... The size difference between the two animals isn't that big.
Well, no, I'm not having that.
No, honestly, think of a seagull. A seagull's massive, right? You've got a smallish monkey. There's not that much difference in size there.
Oh, so we're not talking gorilla.
No, I'm not talking a gorilla. I'm going to send you a video of it, Ben. Bear in mind, this is distressing footage.
Okay.
So brace yourself. And I'm not suggesting that people watch this if they're... They don't want to see it. Don't search for it because it's not the best video in the world, but it is an extraordinary thing and it is nature. I don't know. There's something about the brutality of nature that makes it more acceptable. I mean, there was a weird thing this week of a man being jailed for battering a man with a seagull.
Yes, I saw that news story. I didn't click on it.
If that had been on film, I wouldn't want to see a man abusing an animal in that fashion. But a monkey doing it, it's not pleasant, but there's something of a
good
natural
God.
Thing about it. You watching the video now?
Yes.
It's pretty brutal.
It certainly is. It's incredible.
And you can see there's not a huge size difference between the monkey and the seagull, is there?
There really isn't, but there is... What was he doing up that pole?
Presumably that's a place the monkey can sit on top of a pole and relax.
That monkey has not gone up that pole to relax. He has gone up there to hunt seagulls.
Do you think he's gone up to hunt? I mean, I don't know what happens after that. I don't know whether he then...
Well, it says he ate it.
Oh, he eats it. So it's a food thing. Right.
But that pole, for anyone who doesn't want to watch the video, I can understand that. That pole has got to be 90 feet in the air?
I couldn't tell you. It's
high. Humongous. And this thing is at the top of it. He's not gone up there for fun. He's gone up there to hunt seagulls.
It's a how do you pronounce it? It's a capuchin monkey. Capuchin monkey, I've just seen.
I don't know.
There's a little bit in the report that just... The capuchin monkey even appeared to lick blood off its fingers as the bird became limp following the fatal battering.
Jesus Christ.
Now, I'm not, as I said, I'm not saying this is a thing to watch. I'm just saying I've got to an age where I never thought I'd see anything that would surprise me. But to see a monkey snatch a seagull out of the air and then sadly batter it to death... It's no different than watching any David Attenborough programme where you watch animals hunt. It's horrific to watch. You know when you watch those programmes, do you ever watch them and think, oh, you just... I don't like it when they actually show the animal being caught, because more often than not, they show the animal getting away from the predator. And you're just going, go on, get away. But when they show it and the poor little antelope is brought down, you're like, oh, that's a shame. But it is nature, right? You've got to accept that's what it is.
Yes, but that doesn't mean it isn't distressing. I remember once watching an Attenborough thing, or maybe it wasn't even Attenborough. I think it was. But basically, it was a pack of starving, hungry lions bringing down an elephant.
Yeah, wow.
And it was really hard to watch. And I sort of thought, should there not have been a trigger warning before I saw this? But so who sent you this seagull monkey footage?
I just found it. It popped up on some internet thing.
I'm surprised you clicked on that.
I was too intrigued not to. There was a bit of me thinking, I don't really want to see it. But it just was like, monkey batters seagull to death. You just think, I kind of have to look at this.
Monkey batters seagull. You thought it was some sort of monkey in a fish and chip shop.
Yeah, just sort of handing out battered birds. It's got a whole range of them. But I wouldn't have thought that would be in the diet of a monkey. And it's in a zoo. So you'd have thought that the monkey is well fed.
Is that a zoo?
It's in a zoo. It's in Chester Zoo.
What zoo has these enormous great poles? Well, fair enough.
Yeah.
It kind of looks like those sort of really grainy footage you see of the abominable snowman.
Yes.
The Yeti. It looks like a man in a monkey suit, basically.
Oh, don't tell me it's the man who went to prison. He dressed up as a monkey to do that. I'll tell you what I've dug out for this week's podcast, Ben, because we haven't done it since Christmas.
Go on.
It's the book you bought me, Riddles for Adults.
Ah, now, I seem to remember being quite irritated by this book.
You were
because,
irritated by this quite a lot.
Yes, because I bought you that book in good faith, and it turned out that a few of them are just bad jokes instead of riddles.
Well, shall we try a few more?
Okay.
There's 950 of them in the book.
Well, let's not do all of them now, eh?
Well, give me a... Let's just do a random thing. Give me a random number between 1 and 950.
Let's go for 722.
722. I am the tool for inspiring many. Buy me in the store for not much more than a penny. Don't overuse me. All my usefulness will go. I'm assuming then we have to guess what that is.
Does it not finish that riddle?
You don't say, what am I?
It's usually some sort of question mark at the end of a riddle. It's more of a statement than a riddle.
But no, that's it. So let's assume it's, what am I? I mean, we might find out that that's not what we're supposed to do at all. So I am the tool for inspiring many. Buy me in the store for not much more than a penny. Don't overuse me or my usefulness will go. Right, so a tool for inspiring, but very cheap.
Right.
Pen, don't overuse me, or my usefulness will go.
Yes, but doesn't that apply to everything?
I suppose. Pencil.
All right.
Should just say, all right.
Well, you just kind of, I think you just ignored me and chose something else very similar to your first guess. But surely if you overuse anything, you'll use it up.
Yeah, unless it's, I mean, not everything, because if you have like a tool that you maintain well.
No, because if you've overused it,
right,
then you've overused it.
Okay, so you're questioning the question again.
I tend to nitpick these things, but it is a riddle. It's supposed to be scrutinised.
Yeah. All right, so what could it be?
Well, you can't get a pen or a pencil for more than just more than a penny, can you, really? Unless you're stealing them from Argos. Yeah.
Then they'd be free, wouldn't they? They wouldn't be costing you anything.
So have you got any more thoughts on this? This one's a bit tricky.
I'm a tool for inspiring many. Buy me in the store for not...
Inspiring many?
A penny, yeah. Which is why I think like a pen or like an ink cartridge, because if somebody writes something that can inspire many, but the ink would eventually run out.
What world are you living in that you can buy ink cartridges for just over a penny?
Well,
they're more expensive than champagne ink cartridges.
I was thinking of Shakespearean times. That was what I had in my mind. I had Will Shakespeare with his quill and a little... pot of ink and that he's bought for not much more than a penny.
I'm sure that Shakespeare referred to his ink cartridge as he dipped his quill in it, yeah.
Well, that's not really an ink cartridge, is it? I don't know. Should we look up the answer?
Let's look it up, because I think we need to get a baseline for the quality of these riddles.
The answer is a pen.
Thank you. Got it! Yeah. I feel bad. I feel like I dilly-dallied, and you nailed it straight away.
Straight in there. I'll write another number between 1 and 950.
I would, again, dispute that you can't really buy a pen for 2 pence, but okay. Let's go with number 180.
180. If you toss a coin 10 times and it lands heads up every time, what are the chances it will land heads up if you toss it again?
50-50.
Of course it's going to be 50-50. It's not going to be anything else, is it? That's a pure maths question.
Yes, that is not a riddle. That's a mathematical problem. The feeling to people is that it's improbable to get 11 heads in a row or 20 heads in a row. But the fact is, every time you toss that coin, the odds are always 50-50.
I'll just check the answer.
The 11th toss of that coin doesn't care about the 10 previous coin tosses. So it has to be 50-50, of course.
The answer is, of course, 50-50.
Thank you. That's that Church of England school education working for me very well.
Yeah. See, probability wasn't too posh to teach at your school.
It's like the same thing goes. Like, if you were to get the lottery numbers.
Yeah.
And if the lottery was 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6... That feels incredibly unlikely, but it's no more unlikely than any other combination that could be generated by the lottery.
Quite right. Right, talking about...
I've missed my calling in life. I should have done statistics and probability.
Yeah, but you'd be so fucking dull, mate.
Well, many people will argue that that's the case anyway.
The last 30 seconds has proven it.
Next!
Right, give us another number.
400.
And what was the probability of you choosing 400?
1 in 950.
Right, 400. I am a desire to munch. What am I?
Hunger.
Oh, if it's just hunger, then that's ridiculous.
It's not a riddle.
The answer's hunger.
This is a very disappointing riddle book, isn't it?
Do you know what I'm going to do? I'm going to abandon the book. I'm going to abandon the book, and I'm going to find us some more difficult ones.
Well, the trusty old internet.
Trusty old internet to really push the boundaries of lateral thinking. I don't know how difficult these are, but let's just try these.
So glad I used my money on that Christmas present for you.
Yeah, thanks, real, mate. Thanks,
money well spent, that. The world's shittiest riddle book.
Right, let's try these. An old beggar collects cigarette ends from ashtrays and pavements and uses the tobacco to roll her own cigarettes. She has this practice down to a fine art, knowing that 7 cigarette ends will make 1 cigarette. Since she's collected 49 ends, how many cigarettes can she make from these?
7 cigarette ends can create 1 cigarette.
This doesn't seem much that difficult, does it?
Well, hang on, give me a minute. Give me a minute. 7 cigarette ends can create 1 cigarette.
Yes.
She's got 49.
Yes.
So 7 sevens are 49, correct?
Yes.
So the answer would be 7.
7. If that's the answer, this is just a disappointing, isn't it?
Have you gone to the website that produced that book?
Well, hang on. Just bear with me. The answer's 8.
Explain?
She makes 7 cigarettes from the 49 ends, and then she's able to make 1 more from the 7 she's just smoked.
No, that isn't true.
Well, don't question the answer.
Well, we're assuming that she has not smoked them to completion.
Yeah.
But okay, I'll give it. It kind of caught me out, I suppose.
Okay, do you want to do another one?
Yeah, we'll do another one.
We'll do one more, and then we'll call it a day.
You sound so weary.
Benjamin and Jack were in a 100-meter race. When Benjamin crossed the finish line, Jack was only at the 90-metre mark. Benjamin suggested they run another race. This time, Benjamin would start 10 metres behind the starting line. All other things being equal, will Jack win, lose, or will it be a tie in the second race? I mean, I couldn't even get my head around the question. Benjamin and Jack were in a 100-metre race.
Yeah.
When Benjamin crossed the line, Jack was only at the 90-metre mark. So Benjamin... is 10 metres in front of Jack.
Yes.
Second race, Benjamin would start 10 metres behind the starting line. All other things being equal, will Jack win, lose, or will it be a tie in the second race?
Huh. Well, I'm assuming there's going to be some sort of shenanigans going around, but you would assume it would be a draw.
Yes.
But that seems too easy.
Well, would it be a draw?
I mean, are we assuming that fatigue might kick in and... that Benjamin being faster might still pip Jack to the post because even though he started behind, he's clearly fitter for having won the first race by such a distance.
Yeah, I don't know. I'm going to have to look up the answer there, Ben.
Go on.
Jack will lose again. In the second race, Benjamin started 10 metres back. By the time Jack reaches the 90-metre mark, Benjamin would have caught up to him. Therefore, the final 10 metres will belong to the faster of the two. Since Benjamin is faster than Jack, he will win the final 10 metres and the race. I've no idea, mate. I've no idea how that works.
Not sure about that.
Oh, where's your school maths now, Ben? There we are. That's it for another Trev and Ben podcast. Before we go, as always, a couple of recommendations for you. What you got for us this week, Ben?
This week, I'd like to recommend a 2-part documentary on Channel 4. Basically, part one aired yesterday as we record, and I'm going to watch part two tonight. It's called Jeremy Kyle Show, Death on Daytime. And it's the whole tragic story behind the suicide of Jeremy Kyle Show. I want to find a better word than contestant, participant, I suppose. Guest. and they expose the shocking practices that went on behind the scenes of the Jeremy Kyle show and the flagrant disregard for people's mental health and almost, I mean, possible abuse of people who are less fortunate. And it really exposes the whole program for the circus it was. And I used to enjoy watching the Jeremy Kyle show, but not anymore. It's really exposed itself as a sort of modern day Victorian freak show. Just horrible thing that was ever allowed to happen.
I mean, it is weird because it's I don't know when it stopped being aired. It's a few years ago now. Is it 2 or 3 years?
I think it might be. But I should just clarify, when I say modern day freak show, I don't mean that as disparaging to the people who appeared on it. I just mean that the idea of the show was basically, let's point at these cretins and laugh.
It's horrible. I used to watch it a lot, but I have to say it did become a very uncomfortable watch. I don't know whether I just changed or whether, I don't know, there's a bit of me now that thinks, why was it ever on?
But well, I can't sort of
deny
think
that I got a lot of entertainment out of it at the time.
As did I. And I sort of think I always watched it in good faith, knowing that ultimately these people's best interests were looked after and catered for, but sadly that doesn't seem to be the case.
Yeah, well, I shall look forward to watching that. I've got a couple of recommendations for you. One's on Netflix. It's a limited series about, it's another true crime thing, as you know, I'm into my true crime. It's called Worst Roommate Ever.
Oh, I've seen that advertised. It looks good.
I mean, it's some amazing stories on there. And what's extraordinary is that the last two episodes is a two-parter. And that's probably the most extraordinary one, because it's about this guy who just turns up and takes over someone's house. He just turns up as someone looking for a room and then takes over. And the weird thing was that certainly in the part of America this was in, which I think was Philadelphia, I don't know whether this is the same law across the whole of America, once someone is in your house and is receiving mail, even if it's your house, you cannot get rid of them. It's a very difficult thing to get them out because the law protects them.
It's funny you say that, because only in today's news I saw that a Russian oligarch in London has had his place broken into and raided by, well, not raided, but inhabited by squatters.
Yes.
And I don't really understand at what point you declare the difference between breaking and entering, trespass, and squatting.
Well, yeah, I mean, squatting is generally in unoccupied places that are, yeah, I don't know. That's a very interesting point.
So it's, I mean, yes, you're right, it was unoccupied, but it's still, does that mean if I go out tomorrow and I leave the house empty, someone can just come in and just set up shop? I mean, at what point are you a squatter instead of just a burglar?
Yes, I guess it's if you take up residence. I guess that's the difference, because you're essentially taking up residence in that place.
Okay.
So if you were to go and, if I was out and you were to come in here and take up residence, you'd be a squatter. And I'd have to probably take legal action to get you out.
It just seems like a very strange grey area.
But it's a fascinating programme. I think there's only 4 or 5 episodes, so it's not a long series. Fascinating, though. And the other thing I want to recommend is a new comedy on the BBC called The Witchfinder. Stars Tim Key. There's also Daisy May Cooper is in it. And, guess what? He's a witchfinder. And I've watched the first 2 episodes. It's very funny. It's well worth a watch.
I'll give that a go.
So there we are. That's it for this week. Thank you very much for listening and downloading. Don't forget, you can get in touch with us anytime about anything. We're at Trevor Bird on Twitter. And we'll catch you again next week. Till then, stay safe, stay well, take it easy.
Bye.